Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 427. This is Kevin DeFrango. To my left is Chris Calamita. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Kevin. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Things are moving right along in good old Columbus. And yes, the interesting thing about this very show here tonight is you're on my left. On the right is one Aaron Simmons. You may have known him by Aaron Bauer or Aaron McGuire, especially from previous podcasts. He is with us tonight because we're mostly going to talk about Bobby the Brain Heenan, and who better than one of the original people I saw wearing an I'm a Bobby Heenan Guy t-shirt to join us.
Hey, pardon the interruption. Thanks for having me.
Now, Aaron, the interesting thing to me, I remember Heenan in my childhood. I stopped watching wrestling around 91. I know I've mentioned it before in other shows. And I didn't jump back in until, like, I think it was 97 or so. So I took a good 6 years off, if not a little bit more than that. I always remembered Heenan for being hated. It's definitely more of a more recent thing for me to appreciate a heel. When did you start liking him, I guess, as far as patterning your character somewhat after him?
It was early, very early, that I really liked what he was doing. On commentary especially, but I think the first time that Bobby Heenan made an impact on me was when he and Ken Patera had just re-entered the World Wrestling Federation after I believe a stint in prison, and he come back, and Heenan had used to be his manager, and they were going to have a one-on-one debate over Bobby Heenan felt that Ken Patera came back to the World Wrestling Federation, he owed him nothing, and Ken Patera felt like Bobby Heenan was his manager but had abandoned him when he went to jail. And those two had a debate on whatever superstars or a wrestling challenge, and it was heated. It felt real while I was, nine or whatever years old. It felt real because Ken Patera was like pleading, Bobby, you left me when I needed you most. You were the one who was supposed to be there for me. You said everything would be okay. You'd take care of all the business while I was in jail, and I never heard from you once. I never got a phone call. I never got a letter. I spoke to my family. They said that they hadn't heard from you. My wife, my kids, none of them had heard from you. You really left me out to dry. And Heenan responded, it's not my business to talk to your wife or your snot-nosed kids. And when he said that, I just felt like, wow, man, this guy is mean. I mean, he's really mean. This is a bad, bad person, and I would never want to be like what this man is. And that segment had a big impact on me, but then as time went on, Heenan was managing everybody that was going against Hulk Hogan, and he was trying to end Hulkamania. He's the ultimate bad guy. But it wasn't long after that I started to realize that everything Heenan was doing was for the good guys, for Hulk Hogan, for, wrestling fans to enjoy watching Heenan, the bad guy, get beat up, or, even if he would a lot of times just set himself up for jokes from Gorilla Monsoon. And, you don't know it at first, but after a while, and again, I caught on rather quickly, that this was the shtick right after I found out wrestling wasn't 100% on the up and up. And then once I knew that, though, and once that was made clear to me, after I got done crying, because this was on par with finding out about Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and those things, finding out that wrestling wasn't 100% legitimate, then even though it hurt, then I started to feel like, oh, I get what he's doing here, and I loved it. He was funny, and again, for him, it seemed like he was being selfish. That was his character, but really, he was being selfless. He was making sure that everybody else got over and made sure that the fans were enjoying what he was saying. Even if they didn't agree with it, he was saying things that were so outlandish and so, you know, quote-unquote heelish that it was making him, but it was really making the baby faces. It was making the good guys.
Well, Chris, when did you kind of, I guess, grow an appreciation for him then? Like, in this, was I the only one kind of off board until probably that 97 time?
Oh, let's see. I feel like I started appreciating really appreciating him when he made the move to the commentary, pretty exclusively around 1991, when he was no longer managing. I mean, before that, obviously, of course, I hated him. He wanted to bring down Hulkamania. He wanted to bring down all of my other heroes. You would have entire episodes of TV and the few and far between pay-per-views where he was coming down the aisle, walking down the aisle 4 or 5 times. You get sick of him. But, you know, as time went on, of course, as you know, he started hosting more and more shows, it was always funny. And the amazing thing about his humor is it can appeal to you no matter what age you are. He really did, slapstick, pratfall type stuff, making himself look like a fool. He really, my entire family could get around the TV and just laugh along with Bobby Heenan. So, looking back, those are definitely memories you hold on to, and you start to really appreciate them more and more as time goes on.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, that was kind of an interesting thing. A lot of people, I felt like, mentioned the 1992 Royal Rumble. And I was unawares of this because, again, I cut off my wrestling viewing right before this happened. I did not realize that being fair to air was...
Being fair to air,
which is
fair to,
Mr.
What,
Maguire.
What is he saying? Oh, fair to air, Aaron. Okay, I totally not understand where you're going with that.
Yeah. So I did not realize where exactly you lifted this line there, Aaron.
Yeah, I love that whole being fair to Flair. I love that. I loved, and I'm sure everybody loved the 92 Rumble. And he was perfect because the whole thing was Flair comes in at 3. He's got no chance. And throughout the Rumble, there were times where, okay, he's going to get eliminated. And Heenan was just at his worst. He just, oh, no, this can't be happening. Oh, my God. And then Flair would squeak by and, he'd stay in at the last second or somebody else would get knocked out of the ring and not him. And, so Heenan would start coming back. Okay, we might have a chance, and no, okay, we don't have a chance and whatever. And this isn't fair to Flair. There's two guys beating up on Ric Flair in a battle royal. This isn't fair to Flair. And, Man, I love that. I don't know that there's better commentary on any single match ever. And that's the top for me. That's number one.
That's
borrowed it.
Number one.
Yeah, I definitely borrowed it. When I started doing commentary for Pro Wrestling Ohio on TV, and there happened to be a battle royal, and Marion Fontaine was in it. He had just turned heel. And out of nowhere, I just started saying, well, this isn't fair to Mayor. I wasn't even managing Marion Fontaine at the time, but it just, you know, it was something that was still stuck in my mind from Bobby Heenan saying fair to Flair. So I kept saying, this isn't fair to Mayor. This isn't fair to Mayor. And then, you know, eventually I got linked with Marion Fontaine, and we continued that. But after my run with Fontaine was done, I kind of altered that to say fair to Air. You got to be fair to Air, as in Aaron McGuire, me. So thus my Twitter handle, which I don't use really Twitter ever, but fair to Air, that's my thing.
Yeah, that was one of those things his ability to flip flop, like there are a lot of the announcers now that don't bounce, that can't bounce around like that. And it was really impressive to hear that, probably for the first time. I'm assuming I might have heard some of that commentary previously, but you know, there aren't a lot of things that always live up to the billing, and that one certainly did so.
Yeah. That is, you know, that is the gold standard for wrestling commentary for you know, because I bet you at the end of that hour, Bobby was sweating bullets, just like buckets, just sweating buckets. You know, he put in as much effort and work into his commentary as Ric Flair did into the ring. It was just the same way Bobby Heenan managed. He was always animated, always moving the whole time. He was, you know, the best manager at ringside of all time. That there is no doubt about that. And he put that same energy into his commentary when one of his guys was in commentary, and the whole thing with him being Ric Flair's, you know, financial advisor, that was just, just a brilliant, because the character Bobby Heenan had played, this kind of phony rich guy from Beverly Hills who was really just dirt cheap. They show those things about where he was at the casino and he's gambling, but it's like gambling with like $5. Just stuff like that,
Yeah, I couldn't agree with Chris more. I don't mean to cut you off, but while you were saying that, I was, like, the next thing I was going to say was that at the end of that Rumble, I was exhausted, and not from Flair's, marathon performance in it, but from Heenan's performance. Because he took you on this emotional roller coaster, whether you were cheering for him or cheering against him, you were with Heenan the whole time, and you felt like, oh, the man is crying right now. And then, oh, he's elated. Oh, wait. Oh, now he's pissed. Oh, hold on a second. Now he's ecstatic. Flair's won it, I don't think I was ever more tired than after listening to Bobby Heenan's commentary during that Rumble.
Yes, he to steal something from the Princess Bride, he had a dizzying intellect to get through that. Are there any other commentary spots, I guess, with him that stood out to you, Aaron?
You know what? There's one that everybody talks about, but in a negative light. It's when Hogan was the third man for the NWO at the Bash at the Beach. Okay, and as he's on his way out, Heenan says, well, whose side is he on? And for years after that, I thought, man, for everything good that Heenan's done, he kind of blew it at that point. And I think a lot of people feel the same way. But after I got into commentary, I realized I don't know that that was the case, because Heenan had always said, Hogan is not right. Hogan is selfish. He's always been jealous of, you know, whoever the heels were. He's always been a backstabber. So Heenan was just playing his character as to whose side is he on. Because, of course, Heenan would think that Hogan is a snake in the grass and would join the NWO. But at the same time, he was, you know, Hogan was WCW. So you would think, okay, well, maybe he's WCW side. So I don't know that it was all that bad, and I don't know that the criticism is as fair as it should be for Bobby Heenan on that call. Because I feel like I might have made the same call. If I had, for, you know, 10 years, said that Hogan was a piece of shit, then all of a sudden Hogan comes out, and I'm singing his praises. Oh, thank God Hulk Hogan's here to help us. Then Heenan looks like an ass for that. So, I don't know, maybe he made the right call.
Yeah, that was another moment that I'm not sure that that I was completely on board for yet. So that's kind of an interesting one for me. And what was I, where was it going to go? But yeah, it is one of those things that you could go either way. Like, well, you couldn't go either way. Like, he just wouldn't have, he would lose some credibility, like you said, if he was on Hogan's side just right off the bat.
And, right. I don't know that that's believable.
And I think that's a problem sometimes now when they're transitioning to liking someone who's just turned, is that a switch just flips and the roles get reversed for the announcers. And there isn't, you know, anything building up to that change in perspective.
Yeah, I agree totally.
Yeah, I definitely agree too. I mean, no one has any integrity in their characters when it comes to commentary these days. Bobby Heenan definitely did. I mean, I guess he could have played it as saying something along the lines of, I never thought I'd say this, but thank God for Hulk Hogan. You know, maybe that would have been a better way to do it, but yeah, either way, it didn't do any damage to the angle. It really didn't do any damage. I think that when Hulk Hogan walked out, I think most fans had a pretty good idea about what was about to happen.
You know what? A story that I've heard, even from Tony Schiavone recently, was that they didn't know if Hogan was in fact going to be the third man. So it was a surprise when it happened. Bischoff, Hogan, they weren't going to clue the announcers in, because they were in a time where they felt like they wanted genuine shock, and really Hogan didn't want it to get out that he was going to be the third man. And so Heenan didn't know. Dusty didn't know. Schiavone didn't know. Nobody knew that for sure. They were hoping that that's where it was going, but they weren't sure. If Hogan would have got in there and then just started beating up the NWO, then I believe there was a backup plan for Sting to then turn and be the third man. So I don't know. I think Heenan was just in a difficult position there. And, you know, he made a decision and said what he said, and it gets, you know, criticized a lot, and I don't know that it needs to be.
Yeah, I definitely can understand that. Chris, do you have any other moments that stick out for you?
With Bobby Heenan on commentary, I think The one that's close to being on par with Rumble 92 is the match at, well, I'll try to just, what would be the match months later with Savage and Flair at WrestleMania 8? Once again, more of Bobby Heenan, you know, just being obviously just totally biased, you know, bargaining with God about Flair winning, you know, once again, acting like he had every dime he invested in Flair winning, and then when he lost, you know, just blowing his gasket. Actually, that's how Bobby Heenan would react when any of his guys lost a championship. Was just masterful. He just, you know, like the world was coming to an end, especially when they would go backstage. If there was a payphone in the back, he would knock the phone off of it. He would, you know, pound on lockers, be near tears. But again, no one was better than Bobby at looking legitimately angry at the idea of his guys losing. You know, I look back. I mean, there were times when I think that like Jim Cornette with the Midnight Express would lose would really just like throw like something that akin to a child tantrum, you know, laying down on the back on the mat, you know, kicking his feet and stomping his bashing his elbows against the mat, just being real overkill about it. But Bobby just always played just the perfect level of what seemed like genuine anger over what just happened, and I always appreciated that.
I guess that's one of the ones that, from a managerial standpoint, I was trying to pull up the video in the meantime to confirm what my foggy memory may actually hold for me. But, cause it was along those lines, cause he was managing Andre when he lost to Hogan, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was definitely a blowing the gasket kind of moment. And, you know, again, kind of like the commentary, like he made Andre look great after that, just because everyone loved him for shutting up the weasel as per usual.
You know what? The thing about with Andre, too, is that might be the most beautiful story told in the history of the WWE or all of wrestling. Because Heenan was the antagonist for Andre the Giant for a long time. And even to the point when Andre was babyface, Heenan had gotten Andre suspended from the World Wrestling Federation. And then Andre came back under a mask, and you know, eventually it was found out that Andre was the giant machine, and he was the one under the mask, and he was going to be suspended forever. But on Prime Time, they did a skit where Gorilla Monsoon says, you know, I heard Andre had a hearing with the president of the WWF, and he's been reinstated. The one thing I find weird is you were there, Heenan. What were you doing there? And then Heenan said, well, you know, it's something about he's the one that got him suspended, so he just wanted to know what was going on. And then a couple weeks later, they start to build for Hogan Andre at WrestleMania. So, you know, Andre gets a trophy for greatest superstar of all time. The next week, Hogan gets a trophy for greatest heavyweight champion of all time, and his trophy's bigger. And then, you know, it's all of a sudden it's looking like, oh, Andre might have a beef here with Hogan. And then Bobby Heenan comes out with Andre the Giant on, like, the third week of the Piper's Pit. And when Heenan is out there with Andre, all of a sudden, I remember even as a kid, I started to put it together. Oh, Heenan's the one that lifted the suspension for Andre. He's the one that has secured the services of Andre the Giant. He's managing Andre now. And then Hogan's just like, no, this can't be true, brother. We've been through so much, brother, 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 brother. And then Andre just rips off the necklace with the crucifix of Hulk Hogan, and Hogan's bleeding from the chest, and I mean, it was masterfully done. I don't know that there's a better angle in wrestling.
Right, no, it really was very well done. Because once again, you'd have to, you also go back, you know, 2 or 3 years, and all of the failures that Bobby Heenan managed against Hulk Hogan. Stud failed, Bundy failed, Orndorff failed. What was left for, you know, I guess even, you know, some of the lesser guys in the Heenan family, like a Hercules had their shot, and you know. And still, or Harley Race, and they, you know, they failed. It's just, what else was Heenan going to do? He got Andre. He got in Andre's head about never getting a title shot. About, because one of the things that I'll always remember is when Andre the Giant returned from this suspension / you know, filming The Princess Bride. He walks in on Hulk Hogan, you know, doing on Piper's Pit, and then goes, and Roddy Piper yells out, "It's Hulk Hogan's best friend, Andre the Giant." Really? After everything he's done in wrestling for 15 years undefeated, that's all he is? Because we've all had that moment where we were introduced as someone else's son, someone else's friend, you know, and it's like, wait a minute. I'm important too. I'm not just someone's sidekick. And, you know, it just, you know. And Bobby Heenan preying on all those insecurities in Andre and those frustrations of never being a champion after 15 years undefeated. You know, it was just so well done. And then I'll always remember, it's, I believe it was only they didn't call him back this back then, but like an extra on the Coliseum video, the home video version of WrestleMania 3, the press conference in Detroit, in Pontiac, Michigan, where all the local media was there. And of course, you know, it's the late 80s, local media, you know, the sports guys, they're all rolling their eyes. And Bobby Heenan just puts on this tour de force performance, cracking them up, you know, getting them, you know, engaging, these stuffed shirt sport, you know, Detroit sports guys. And really, it was his show. And it was, you know, if you can ever see that version of WrestleMania 3, I definitely recommend going out of your way to see that part, because it's right before the main event where the press conference where, you know, Bobby just completely takes it over.
Yeah, you're right, man. He was the perfect person for that role. And they couldn't have created a more perfect threesome for that. You know, Hogan, the ultimate good guy. Andre, now the ultimate bad guy, but a monster bad guy that hadn't lost in 15 years and was Hogan's best friend at one point and his mentor. And, you know, and then Heenan, the worst, you know, weasel, snake in the grass of all time. And he's gotten his hooks into Andre.
Yeah, and I guess something that I was not too aware of, honestly, was the fact that Heenan was a wrestler also. I mean, I know that I saw him definitely take some bumps, and I feel like he was in a few matches as a manager, but, you know, that was something that I was kind of new information for me.
Yeah, I mean, Bobby probably, you know, I think I saw something about, you know, there's the cage match database website that pretty much keeps a very, very detailed record of people's matches. And Bobby had nearly 1,000 matches that were on record. You know, I wouldn't be sure if it was that much, but I knew that like early in his career, he wrestled and managed a lot more. I mean, even in his early WWF run, it's still, there's like this weird matches with him, you know, at Madison Square Garden wrestling like SD, you know, Bobby Heenan is winning squash matches in 1984 over like the looks of SD Jones and Salvatore Palomo. It's weird to watch. And then, you know, once again, and when videotape, you know, when nostalgia really started to hit in the mid 2000s, and they, you know, and all the DVD releases and the WWE 24/7, you know, cable on-demand cable, you know, which, you know, was the predecessor to having the WWE Network, you know, and you see all these things, and it's, yeah, it really, you really didn't realize, you know, he really was, he was never going to be maybe a big star as a wrestler, but he knew how. He was probably, he was arguably better than most at it, you know, as, you know, the subtleties of wrestling work. And the psychology and heel psychology. He was he could absolutely, you know, he coined the phrase, you know, manage like a wrestler, meaning while he's at ringside, you know, incredibly aggressive because he knows that, you know, he's got his guy out there with him. He's going to keep him from harm, you know, being boisterous and animated. But then when he's in the ring himself wrestling, he turns into to a total chicken shit. He's a total chicken shit. I mean, he definitely, he wrestled probably a lot more than people would think.
And he was brilliant for that. And to, like, you know, a much lesser extent, but that's kind of how I patterned my career, was that I started training to wrestle and it hurts, you know, and I didn't like the pain every day. And I knew one thing, that I could talk, and I knew that there weren't many guys in indie wrestling that could talk. So my role would probably be better suited to be a manager that could talk for these guys that couldn't talk. And I would still be able to be out there and in front of the camera or at ringside, whatever. I could still take center stage, but I could do it in a way where I wasn't getting hurt that often, only on big occasions, and then I was able to lend my speaking abilities to these guys that really couldn't talk. You know, and then every once in a while when it was time, I'd take the big, you know, the F5 or whatever the move was. And that's, that's because of Heenan.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. One of the things that I was impressed with, someone had just a little gif of it, of one of the times that Heenan jumped out of the ring. And, I mean, he vaulted up over the top rope, down onto the floor. I was like, oh, my God, that is impressive.
Yeah, I probably know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. He would do that all the time. He would take these crazy flip bumps off of punches from the likes of Hogan and Warrior. He was pretty fearless until, you know, the point where, you know, doctors told him you can't do this anymore. I mean, he had probably neck issues dating back to the 80s, and finally by 91 he was, kind of forced to retire. I mean, I'm sure it killed him when Flair came in, that he wasn't able to stay at ringside with him, and that they had to do the thing where he's, you know, the financial advisor while on commentary, while Mr. Perfect at ringside was Ric Flair. I'm sure, you know, I'm sure it killed him that after all these years of probably hoping Flair would come in so that he could manage him. By the time it actually happened, you know, Bobby just had nothing left.
Yeah, you know, and another thing, by him moving to the commentary booth, it was great because he got, okay, when he was managing, say he was managing the Heenan family, right, and there were five guys in the Heenan family, he would get those five guys over. But when he was commentating full time, then he was getting everyone on the card over, babyface or heel, just by, you know, like Hacksaw Duggan. You know, Hacksaw Jim Duggan would come out, and Heenan would talk about how stupid he was, and it was like he was putting him down, but then he would turn and make it so that Duggan was actually smart, like Duggan make it like a schoolboy or something. He'd go, oh, well, I didn't know that he was going to be pulling out roll-ups like that, and, you know, he's stupid, he doesn't know this move, and then Duggan would, you know, pull out another move that seemed like something that Duggan wouldn't do. He'd get somebody over that way, and then he'd get the heels over, you know, Brooklyn Brawler or whatever. even if he wasn't at ringside for him, he would still put him over on the commentary. So if you watched a show, an hour-long show, and you saw 12, 15 different wrestlers, all those 12, 15 different wrestlers, plus the managers, would all get the rub off of Heenan because he was putting them over one way or another on commentary.
Yeah, I definitely agree with what Aaron said about how, you know, Heenan moving to commentary exclusively was a help to everyone else on the show, because there's the night I found out, you know, the night Heenan died, and, you know, I wanted to watch some you know, prime time or whatever from that sweet spot era, you know, I ended up landing on this playlist of all of the stuff when Piper was doing the co-hosting on primetime along with them, and Piper and Rick Rude were feuding, and, you know, after Piper had cost Rick Rude the Intercontinental title, and, I mean, it's great, great. It's some of the best stuff you'll ever see of Bobby Heenan and Roddy Piper cutting promos on each other for entire shows, but literally that's all they talked about. I mean, this Roddy Piper-Rick Rude feud pretty much got more time than maybe any feud in wrestling history, because, you know, these entire episodes of primetime, which, while wildly entertaining, and I recommend anyone to, you know, type in, you know, Piper Heenan primetime or what have you into the YouTube search bar, because they're incredibly great, but literally nothing else was discussed on primetime for like 3 months.
Yeah, primetime was an amazing show, even, you know, especially with the Piper stuff, but even just regular, when they were putting on, you know, they were like old matches that were in the can that they were using for primetime. Sometimes the matches would be 2 years old, and they were just throwing them on there. And sometimes the guys wouldn't even be teaming together anymore. But Heenan was still on there and still making the show must-see.
Kind of like what I was just talking about with this playlist on YouTube of the best of Piper and Heenan together on primetime. It's just those segments with all the matches cut out, and I had to make I had to tweet out, like, primetime wrestling with no wrestling matches might be the best wrestling show of all time.
True.
On primetime, you would have situations where they would just throw matches together on there, and it might be like Jim Powers versus Steve Lombardi, the Brooklyn Brawler, in a match that went to a 20-minute draw.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It might have been a match of a house show, and that's what you did back then.
But what you look forward to was when they would go to commercial break, and it would be Heenan and Monsoon, and they'd be bickering back and forth. And then when they come back from commercial break, before they return to the match, Heenan would, like, be on the phone. They'd be trying to talk to somebody, make some business deal or something. And he'd be talking. It's just the craziest stuff. There was one I just watched last night where it was Bobby Heenan's 2-year anniversary on primetime, and they got a big cake for him. And Monsoon's cutting pieces and giving pieces of cake to everybody. And Heenan's getting upset because he doesn't think he's going to get any cake at the end, which reminds me of an Office Space scene. So Heenan's like, whoa, you're giving that guy a piece? You're giving that guy a piece? That guy doesn't even work here. That guy just sweeps the floors. What are you doing? And then in the end, there's like half the cake left. And Monsoon says, oh, I just got word this cake is no good. And Heenan goes, what do you mean it's no good? He says, yeah, I just found out that they used I don't know. They use something else other than yeast or other than baking powder. He's like, you could tell, I guess, just by the smell. So Heenan goes to smell the cake, and then Monsoon says, oh, I think that's the phone ringing, and he goes to grab the phone, and it puts, you know, Heenan's face right into the cake. And, you know, a million times, anytime you see a cake and a wrestler, you know what's going in the wrestler's face. But this one, it wasn't just a man picking up a cake and throwing it into a guy's face. They went about it a different way, you know, creative. And it was just Monsoon reaching to grab the phone, which caused Heenan's face to go in, and good stuff.
Yeah, I believe that was that one of the segments that the WWE aired last night?
Yes, they did. Yeah, that was there. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I missed most of that show last night. I have it on DVR. I'll watch it. But when I got home last night, I watched, you know, hours of Heenan stuff.
Well, that was definitely a better choice than what they ended up putting out there. Honestly, if you wanted to watch Heenan stuff, so I think that was the wise decision on your end.
Oh, yeah, right. Bobby Heenan, the best of Bobby Heenan versus just about anything on TV today. You made the right choice.
Have either of you guys ever seen the Bobby Heenan show? I think it lasted 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, it lasted 4 weeks. You know, it could have been so much better if it wasn't Bobby Heenan delivering Vince McMahon's idea of scripted comedy, and it was more Bobby Heenan's idea of scripted comedy. Because I do think that a show where with a monologue and skits and actual real guests instead of these weirdos that they lined up. I think Bobby Heenan could have knocked that out of the park if they really made an honest attempt to do a Bobby Heenan talk show.
Sure, you know, and another thing though is that Bobby Heenan is great playing off of someone. You know, I think he's better playing off of someone when he's reacting to what somebody else is doing in his improv. It's just like, here's a script, and you're going to say these jokes, and you know, whatever. But he didn't have Gorilla there, which, you know, speaks volumes on Gorilla and what he contributed to there. I mean, they're the tag team champions of commentary.
Yeah, they absolutely are, yes. Yeah, Bobby having someone to play off of, having a straight man to play off of, you know, making situational observations, doing pratfalls. I mean, he did tell a story in a book of the one time he was invited by Ray Combs, the former, the old host, the second host of Family Feud, who's, you know, no longer with us either, you know, to do, you know, stand-up comedy at one of the big clubs in L.A., and Heenan just always said that, you know, he bombed. That was not, stand-up comedy was not his thing. It was, you know, slapstick stuff, you know, situational observations. Maybe he would have been a brilliant as a sitcom dad at some point, but no, but yeah. Yeah, certain things about, you know, delivering jokes that, you know, in that setting did not work for him.
Well, you guys are certainly giving me plenty of material to look at. Is there anything else worth mentioning before we wrap on up this old show here?
You know, I'll say a small story here that a couple of years ago I got to be Heenan at a show, and he was, you know, in his, you know, one of his worst conditions. And I did, you know, I made sure I went out of my way to go up and talk to him. He was the one guy in wrestling I wanted to meet and talk to before, you know, he passed. So I went over, and I was with Gregory Iron and Zach Allen, and the three of us went over to talk to him and introduce ourselves. And Heenan let me sit down and explain to him that I was working as a color commentator, and I was telling him that, you know, I try to pattern some of my stuff after him. He was, you know, such a big influence, blah, blah, blah. It was hard to understand a lot of things he was saying back to me, but eventually we got to a point where I could kind of understand. And, you know, he asked to see my work, and he said, you know, maybe there was a chance that I could take over, you know, and he was just being really nice. You know, he probably, you know, didn't care if I was, you know, being a color commentator in his fashion. But he knew Zach Allen for sure, remembered him from his WWE run. He liked Gregory Iron because Greg has cerebral palsy and is a wrestler. So we were going to take pictures, and Heenan got up, and he had a cane. And at this point, he had me take his cane, and he asked me to pass it to Greg. And so I passed it to Greg, and then he asked Greg to hit him over the head with the cane. And that not legit, but, you know, just for this photo op. But I was laughing because I thought, you know, here's Heenan, and his best days are way behind him, and these are his worst days. But he's still going to work a spot with us at just some indie show during a photo session. And I thought that was great. It was, you know, it really helped, like all of us, me, Zach, Greg, we really enjoyed doing that with him. And then when Bobby asked for his cane back, I give him his cane, and then he asked where his wallet was. And I wasn't sure, you know, I don't know. And he kept saying it was in his pocket, and then he dug in his pockets and it wasn't there. And then he went and started telling people that I took his wallet from him. And it was Heenan, though. I realized, oh, my God, he's working. He's working right now. He's telling people that I stole his wallet from him. So people are, like, looking around. And then he reaches to his back pocket, and then he kind of does, like, the eureka. You know, oh, here it is. It's in this pocket. I missed it. Okay, I can sit back down. And as he's going to sit back down, he jumps right back up off the chair, and he looks at the lady standing behind him, and he says, ow, did you do that? And she looks, she says, what? He says, this woman grabbed my butt. And he's telling everybody there, you know, and some woman just grabbed his butt out of nowhere, and it was great. And then he turned to Greg, and he said, I have one piece of advice for you. A friend in need is a pest. So he got in spots and his signature lines with us all within this little 20, 30-minute time that we had together.
Well, I cannot think of a better way to send this show out than with that story.
Yeah, I got nothing.
So, yeah, that was at Chris Calamita. I'm at DeFrango 11. He is at Fair to Air, even though he does not tweet much. I would like to thank Aaron for jumping on here with us for this very special edition of the show. And, yeah, everybody, have a good night.